It is Locked On Jazz for the 12th of November. Jazz get thoroughly outplayed by Indiana. We'll dig into why it's taking place and why the Jazz don't look quite right. We'll also look at what the outside influences on the day, the ejections, and then it's the first edition of Points Gained. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks for making Locked On Jazz your first listen of the day. Push that button, subscribe, and grab the subscribe button on YouTube and hit the bell, and it'll notify you of that as well. Today's show also available on all of your podcasting platforms, and we are, as always, free and available on all platforms. The first chat room question was, are you okay? I had not talked yet today, and my voice clearly is tired since 12 hours ago I was calling an NBA game, so I think that's probably it more than anything. This episode of Locked On is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. Yes, Donovan Mitchell wore a Locked On t-shirt yesterday at the end of the presser. That was really cool. Nice of him to rep, and we appreciate it. It was just super cool of him. All right, Jazz got hammered last night, really beat in every aspect, and I think it's symbolic of something larger. I do think there's two things that need to be addressed kind of to put the conversation somewhat in context first. The players respectfully, after the game, said that the issues with the young girl, Izzy, who was 10 years old, black, autistic girl, committed suicide at a Davis high school, did not have any impact. And that is nice and respectful of our players and appropriate. And so I'm going to take the other approach of sharing what I saw yesterday in person, which is Donovan and Joe both go through, you know, all of shoot around knowing that post game, that this is what they're going to talk about. So this is clearly talked about well before the day starts, and maybe yesterday, the day before, but probably, you know, well before the day starts, it's now discussed. Hey, by the way, afterwards, you're going to talk to the media and da, da, da. So that is a blatant distraction throughout shoot around because there's something more important to talk about. When Donovan finished his session where he was noticeably mad, using his word, he walked out of the room, and as he walked out, he reached up with his hands toward the top of the doorwell and just kind of put his hands up on the doorwell, just like a stretch and exhaustion and an overwhelmed kind of body movement. Like, think about Andy Larson actually did a nice job in the triple team today in the Salt Lake Tribune and like just listed it. It's incessant. It's incessant and never ending for us right now in our community. And Donovan has been the one who's been the spokesperson each and every time. Beautifully, incredibly. For Joe, the fear and the emotions were incredible. And for most of us, myself, I'm speaking of, and probably most of you, I don't think any of us can quite understand what living in a community where a black kid who's 10 years old commits suicide because they were bullied is like. And I'm not sure we can really, unless you, again, are one of the few, know what it's like to be a parent of a six-year-old autistic kid where you're talking about what happens if your kid goes to school and gets bullied and the kids aren't nice, and then have it happen 12 miles from downtown. So the idea that that didn't have an impact on how they played last night is foolhardy. And it's not just Donovan and it's not just Joe. It's all of them. They all talk about it. Many of them are black men, so it impacts all of them. And they talk about it all the time, and it's there. And it just, if you watch them play last night, their execution was terrible. They were grumpy and yelling at the officials on every play. It was ridiculous. When you're that far out of whack, there's something going on. So they weren't good last night, and that they were distracted. It doesn't take away that they weren't good, and we'll dig into that. Second thing is on the ejections. Rudy was smart. I mean, it was silly. Rudy kind of like Rudy's post game a little bit about it. Rudy was smart. He didn't throw a punch. He didn't do something horrendous, but he stood up for himself when the guy came back and got him. Like Rudy pulled him down. Correct. Should have been a foul. Miles Turner ran and bumped him. Correct. Should have been a foul. Rudy reacted. Okay. Tip of the hat to the security guys in that corner that were not affiliated with the team. I think we're just affiliated with the arena because that was incredible how fast they got there and did their job. Joe, unintentional contact. I think that's super important that that's the way it's being characterized. And Donovan from escalating. Hopefully the way that sounds, everyone's available on Saturday. So, so that's, you know, let's get that. All right. Here's what's happening to the Jazz. Big picture. It doesn't feel right. They don't look right. They're not particularly good right now. You know, ironically, they're not particularly good. They're 8-4 and they have like, they still probably have one of the best, if not the best offense in the league while seeming to be way off. Like we have to keep putting it in context. The schedule has been easy. And against the good teams, they haven't looked good. I'm not, there's no hiding that. I think they would all admit that. Here's what's going on. When you are, and they have the second best differential in the league. When you have the best record in the NBA, like the Jazz did last year, and you really pretty much throttled the entire league, the league's incredible, and all of the coaches go to the offseason, and they go analyze the Utah Jazz, if they weren't doing it in the middle of the season. Like Eric Spoelstra, I promise, spent the offseason looking at the Utah Jazz. The other aspect of the Jazz, they're the best coach, if not one of the best, if not one of the best, and they have the most creative coach in the league. So everyone's going to go look at what Quinn's doing. And then we were on the analytical forefront last year of some things. So everyone's going to dig into that and try to figure out why. And that's what we're seeing. What Rick Carlisle did last night was he was the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. They were up 2-0 on the LA Clippers. They thought they were playing the Utah Jazz in the second round of the playoffs. And he rolled out his playoff game plan last night. And that was quite simply, there's no way an Eastern Conference coach that hasn't been around and played the Jazz a million times know the Jazz plays that game plan last night. Unless, of course, that Eastern Conference coach was an assistant coach for the Dallas Mavericks last year, in which case they were up 2-0 against Clippers, ready to play the Utah Jazz, and their name is Jamal Mosley, and they're the head coach of the Orlando Magic. Like, the league is playing us in a certain way right now because they studied us, because we had the best record in the NBA, because we took the most threes, because we took the most threes in transition, because we took over 50% of our threes in transition, because we started offensive rebounding. We simply did things that other teams in the league weren't doing in a style, in a manner that other teams didn't. And then at the end of all of it, we got brutally exposed by the Clippers. Brutally. And so this league's really, really good. And these coaches are brilliant. And so these coaches are sitting around and watching the league and seeing what's going on. And there's now a script on how to play us. And we couldn't answer it last night. Could not answer it in the slightest. Should we be able to answer that by game 12 with the same roster that we had a year ago? And the answer is probably not. Should we be able to answer it by game 70? Hope so. And maybe most importantly, can we answer it by game 35 or 40 when the trade deadline comes up? And if we can't by then, the front office has a huge obligation with no shits to play with and almost no mechanism by which to do it to try to make a move to change the roster. So that's that's where we are. And I'll dig into what those things were and what Indiana did last night. But that's the reality that we're living in right now. By being in the number one seed, by having one of the top 10 differentials of all time in the NBA last year, by winning 52 games, which was the equivalent of 60, we became the model to what was going on in the league, and we're now seeing it, right? If you look at the league's changing the way it's playing into a manner that's more similar to what we did last year and now and know how to attack us. So now the Jazz have to figure it out. That's really where we are. All right, I'll specifically get into last night and then points gained as well. Three items that Indiana did to Utah last night that they couldn't combat and will be interesting. And some of them we talked about the day before, so some of them were unique to Indiana. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for making us your first listen of the day. Your second listen today, Locked On Bets. They're on fire. They've had 12 of the last 14 weeks of winning weeks. That is pretty good on Locked On Bets. Short, quick gambling hit. Your boy Q and Lee Sterling take you around. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street. Also located in Logan and in Linden. The great lineup of SUV cars. The Palisade is the beauty. King Poobah, the Santa Fe, I've bought two of. There's the Tucson and the Kona. Plus, there's the Elantra and the Sonata, which are the sedans. I'm driving the Sonata right now. It's just absolutely fabulous. The Elantra won the North American Car of the Year. They're all available for you at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, also located in Linden and in Logan. The Murdochs have been in Utah for over 80 years and have decided not to charge more than MSRP under any circumstance at all. So impressively, they're being loyal to that. And to you, for all the years that you've been connected, Blake simply said to me, I don't want to go to the grocery store or the church and see people we took advantage of. It'll pay us off over the next 80 years to be loyal to the people here. And that's exactly what the Murdochs have done. If you want to email me first at dlock09 at gmail.com, I'll set you up with a VIP meeting at any of the three locations. Just tell me where you're going. At dlock09 at gmail.com, it's Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street in Linden and in Logan. This episode is also brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and families come to reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for a study group knowing dependable Wi-Fi and endless supplies of fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, and the home team or the away team can come to recharge. It's a place you always look forward to stopping at a long road trip to rest your legs and refuel. It is McDonald's. So stop by and get the fries, the McFlurries, whatever it might be, at your local McDonald's. Stop by on the road trip. It's McDonald's. I'm loving it. Not singing. Not singing. Won't do it. All right. So three things last night. So one of the things we did last night is we played in transition. Or last year, we played in transition. And by playing in transition, we got off 7 threes a game. We shot 43% on those threes. We had the second best effective field goal percentage in transition, and we were deadly. There are two ways to get back to stop transition. One is that you get back and try to cover all the area, which is hard when people are running to threes. Or number two is that you physically go after the offensive rebounds, force the Jazz to have more guys back, and then beat them on the glass. And that was the approach that Rick Carlisle took. Also, that if with Miles Turner, Sabonis' two fouls, I thought, really helped Indiana. Because Sabonis is not hard for Rudy to deal with and is not someone that we don't struggle with. And, you know, Donovan and Rudy, Donovan and Joe both kind of came out with great energy after going through the day. I thought they both, you know, came out. We were up 18-12. And Sabonis goes out of the game, and then things start to slip away a little bit. And some of it's T.J. McConnell came in and caused problems, but also it forced Rudy to play a little bit further from the basket. And then they started pounding the offensive glass. When they suddenly were able to get Rudy up higher, then now Boyan is a bad rebounder. Royce is small. Mike and Donovan, who are small, have to go get rebounds. And in the first quarter of the game, and if we actually start doing the range filter on it, they get 5 of their 11 misses as offensive rebounds. And I think if we kind of look at the moment in which Sabonis gets his second foul and leaves the game, it's actually more severe. I'll have to kind of check that and make sure. But in the final minutes, they get, let's see when Sabonis went out of the game. Sabonis, in the final about 7 minutes of the quarter, they missed 6 shots and they get 3 offensive rebounds out of it. That's when it started, is after Sabonis left the game, and then they pull Rudy a little bit higher, and that's been our issue. So they just absolute pound us on the glass. In the final, after Sabonis went out, in the final 8:21, they had 5 offensive rebounds of the quarter. We had 3 defensive rebounds. I mean, that's ridiculous. But that's also where that's a weakness, right? Like, that's where if Rudy's not grabbing the rebound, Royce was our second leading rebounder last year. We don't physically have another really good rebounder. In the second quarter, Sabonis comes back and they just pound us again. They get 7 of their 14 misses as offensive rebounds. Rudy got 4 defensive rebounds. Donovan got 1. Joe Ingles, who's not a good rebounder, got 1. Hassan Whiteside got 1. So this is where our guys have to make an incredible commitment on the defensive glass to get rebounds. But also, it was absolutely, you know, a case where that's one of our weaknesses is those guys, what their skill set is. Rick Carlisle knew it from Dallas, came and pounded us on it and took advantage of us. So that was the first part. Our half court, what did we do great? The things we do great, we're still doing great. Our half court defense was fabulous in the first half of the game, except for the fact we didn't board. They couldn't score in the half court against us. And I'm not sure they ever really did score in the half court. They scored 88 points per 100 possessions, 41st percentile in the half court, but they got 36% of their offensive rebounds. They got in transition more than we would like, which, you know, for a team that's not in transition very much, they were in transition a lot more than usual and ran on us much more because they didn't want to let Rudy get set defensively. So there's the second part of it is that they flipped it around. And part of what happened to us defensively is they got into their sets quickly and actively. And so we never got to get our defensive game plan. We were kind of recovering on every possession. Again, they know us well. If Rudy ends up getting set defensively, you're dead. And so they didn't let it happen. The second one is they played a lot of 1-5 switching last night. This is the answer on us, particularly when Joe's at the point guard. There was a play last night I liked where Joe went and tried to beat somebody and actually beat him and passed to the corner on a beautiful play. Joe's not one who can generally beat you one-on-one. And so when you have Joe in the game and we play the pick and roll, you switch it, and now Joe's stuck. I think he was guarded by Sabonis, and he actually beat him. But that's not something that we really can handle. And they were able to switch 1-5 defensively, and we didn't feel like we dealt with it great last night. The offense kind of slowed down. The ball stopped moving. This is what everyone knows. Again, why? Because what we're good at, the pick-and-roll game with Rudy rolling and shooters spread, you're dead. You can't do it. Like Rick knows, last year we probably had 2 of our best games of the entire year against Dallas on that back-to-back sequence, and he's not going to play the same way again. And so what they did is they switched everything 1-5 and really forced you to throw it down low to Rudy and make Rudy beat you offensively, and he's not that. It's not he's got to find a way so that if Malcolm Brogdon is on him, he can pin him at 4 feet and score over the top of him. And if he can't do that, that's going to be a big problem for us because that's how you beat 1-5 switching, really. The reason the ball movement stops is because no one's leaving their man. They're hugging their shooters. They're switching the pick. Rudy rolls. Rudy's got a small on him. He's got to find a way to take advantage of it. And that's the script. That's what everyone studied and everyone looked at and everyone knows. And it's not that complicated. And the league watched the Clippers do it. It was really pretty pronounced. And it's now out there. The good news is we're getting it every night. We got it from Orlando. We got it from Miami. We didn't get as much from Atlanta, strangely. But they also have Trae Young, so they can't do as much with it. And they, in turn, we're now getting practice on it every night, which is probably the good news. And that's how we get better at by game 70. The third one is get Rudy out of the middle. I talked to coaches on the other side. I've been in this league for a long, long time. And they all say the same thing, what their game plan is. Their game plan is to move Rudy, attack where Rudy's not, see if they can pull Rudy out of the middle. Quinn's game plan is everything he can possibly do to get Rudy in the middle. Problem last night was because Indiana was playing with a pretty good thrust and getting down the floor quickly, then the Jazz were scrambling and Rudy, they weren't able to do the rotations that they had planned to get Rudy into the middle of the lane and keep him there. But that's the game, right? The game from us is if Rudy stays in the middle, you're dead, and we have a great half-court defense, and if you can play quickly or do it without Rudy in the middle. And so we saw that. Like Malcolm Brogdon just and understandably, I talked about this on the pregame show, that we expected this, or the pregame show, the day before show, you know, we expected this to happen. Malcolm Brogdon is huge, and as when Mike Conley tried to guard him last night, he couldn't do it. Like, he just physically, at 6'5", 230 pounds, just absolutely manhandled Mike Conley. You know why? Because he's 6'5", 230 pounds, and Mike Conley is 6'1", 175. He has 60 pounds on Mike Conley. Not a lot Mike can do about that. He just bogarted him. So we switched Royce to him eventually, and Miles Turner pulled. And probably the biggest sequence of the game where we talk about the game very differently is that Miles Turner hit three threes. So also the Jazz three-point shooting, we had another bad night, 9 of 32. With everyone switching as much, the shots can't be quite the same. I know we keep seeing all the data that says the shots are quite the same, but they can't be quite the same. Because teams are defending us a bit differently than they did before, and so it must be. Last night, we were back down at 268 passes, 22 assists. We ran 97 picks. We actually had success in the pick and roll. We had success in the drive game. I think we only had one transition three the entire night. Last year, we averaged taking seven and going three or four of seven every night. I don't think we had very many transition possessions last night. The numbers when they supposedly, according to Second Spectrum, they switched on 18 of their pick and rolls. We averaged 0.92 points per possession. But the Malcolm Brogdon, Domantas Sabonis pick and roll was 1.6 points per. Like, they killed us on that. Our Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell pick and rolls were great. So we actually answered in a lot of ways. But Joe Ingles pick and roll with Rudy Gobert, which is them switching, is down. Joe has not got his pick and roll game going, and it's largely because the league, I think, has out that they switched that pick and roll. And so this is difficult. So those are the things. And we're going to see it again against Miami, and we're probably going to see it again against Toronto, who really can switch. And the league has come prepared to not get beat by the Jazz by 20 every night. And so this is going to be a really interesting stretch to see how our guys deal with it, whether we can get better, and whether we have the personnel to get better. And that's how you win a title. You know, I don't think it's quite the same, but Milwaukee's hovering around 500. They were last year at this time, too. I think you see this. Like, the teams that kind of bend the game a little bit, this is what you see happen to them from the other teams. Points gained. Where's Rudy rank offensively? Where's Donovan rank offensively? Where's Jordan rank offensively? We'll look at all of it. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. If the coconut brownie chunk is still available, it is. Trust me, jump on it. Coconut brownie chunk, best protein bar I've ever had in my entire life. 100% real chocolate, 100% delicious, amazing. I mean, really amazing. 150 calories, 15 grams of protein, 7 grams of sugar. I'm not going to talk to you about paranormal pumpkin. I'm not going to talk to you about cherry lime. I'm not going to talk to you about peanut butter brownie. I'm going to talk to you about coconut brownie chunk. Now, if you're on the anti-coconut team, that's your own problem because you're missing out. Go check it out at built.com. Built Bar has 130 calories, 2.5 fat grams, 4 net carbs, 4 sugars, and 17 grams of protein in most of their bars. They are basically a candy bar that is a protein bar, 100% real chocolate and 100% delicious. Absolutely fabulous. You're going to get into the action this weekend. Do it at our friends at betonline.ag with the promo code Locked On. Oh, by the way, promo code for Built Bar is Locked15. Locked15. The Built Bar's coconut brownie Built Bar is so good that you actually shouldn't even use a promo code. It's just that good. Built, but go ahead and use it. Locked15. Betonline.ag is the place to get into all the action this weekend if you want to get rolling. Denver is a 2.5-point favorite over the Philadelphia Eagles. The Raiders are a 2.5-point dog to the Kansas City Chiefs on the late Sunday night game, as the big week of the NFL is going on for you. On the NBA end of things, you can jump aboard with all the fun action. You actually play the European games as well. It's all at betonline.ag. Promo code Locked On will get you a 50% welcome bonus. Some good ones tonight. Phoenix is in Memphis. That's a 1-point spread on that game. Dallas is in San Antonio. Dallas is a 2.5-point favorite in that. Chicago and the Warriors tonight's the headliner, and that one's at Golden State. The Warriors are a 5.5-point favorite. We'll see if Minnesota can upend the Lakers. Minnesota's lost like 6 in a row. Lakers are 2.5-point favorite in that. It's all at betonline.ag. 50% welcome bonus with the promo code Locked On. All right, here we go. It is the first edition of Points Gained. For those that are new to Points Gained, Points gained is an exclusive Locked On metric. Judges offensive performance, looks at a player's efficiency compared to an average possession in the NBA, and then how many possessions they use in a night. So it values high possession usage, but efficient use of the possessions, and looks at if you use 20 scoring opportunities in a night, or 10, what do you do compared to if the average players in the league combine to use those possessions, singular, multiple, whatever, what do you do compared to that? So the number one offensive player in the league at this point with a stunning 5.6 is Kevin Durant. Not a big surprise. Just to put it in perspective, last year Steph Curry was the best at 4. Durant, Zion, and Nikola Jokic were all over 3. And then there's usually about 8 or 9 guys that are 2. Last year was Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Zach LaVine, Michael Porter Jr., Dame Lillard, Rudy Gobert, Rashawn Holmes, Kawhi Leonard, and John Collins. In 1920, James Harden was the best at 3.3, Karl Anthony at 3.2, John Collins at 3.1, Dame at 3.0. So we usually have about 4 players over 3, and then about 5 or 6, 7 players over 2. Rudy Gobert, Duncan Robinson, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Devin Booker, Mitchell Robinson, and Rashawn Holmes. In the 18-19 season, just to stick with it, Giannis was the best at 3.6. Steph was 3.5. Harden was 3.3, 3 over 3. And then about 7 guys over 2. Kevin Durant, Rudy Gobert, Clint Capella, Carl Anthony Towns, Danilo Gallinari, John Collins, Kawhi Leonard, Montrezl Harrell. A lot of the same names. So where are we starting the year? The numbers are usually a little higher. And Kevin Durant has started at a 5.6. That is incredible. Nikola Jokic is at a 5.1, which is how Denver is somehow winning basketball games. Montrezl Harrell is at a 4.2, might be why Washington's winning games. Seth Curry is at a 4.0, which is how Philadelphia's winning without Ben Simmons. Harrison Barnes, I love Harrison Barnes, is at 3.7. Rudy Gobert is at 3.6. Rashawn Holmes is at 3.2. Steph Curry, 3.0. Norm Powell, 2.9. Domantas Sabonis, 2.9. Jimmy Butler, 2.9. Jared Allen, 2.8. John Collins, 2.7. Lots of twos right now. We'll run through most of them. Karl Anthony Towns, Frank Kaminsky, great bench for Phoenix. Carmelo Anthony, 2.6. Wow. Nicholas Batum, 2.6. Zach LaVine, Miles Turner, 2.5. Robert Williams, Mike Conley at 2.3. Incredible. Jaylen Brown, 2.3. LaMarcus Aldridge, Eric Gordon, Mikal Bridges, Zeke Njai at Denver, Mitchell Robinson, Grayson Allen, and Gordon Hayward and Zubac are at all 2.0. That's interesting. Let's look at the Utah Jazz overall. Someone has a question specifically in the chat room. We can. Rudy Gobert is at 3.6, Mike Conley at 2.3. Joe Ingles is at 1.2. Just to put this in perspective, let's go to last year. Last year, Rudy was 2.3, Joe was 1.8, Faves was 0.7, Mike Conley was 0.5, Boyan was 0.5, Niang 0.4, Royce 0.3, Donovan minus 0.1 or even, and Jordan was minus 0.7. My premise is you got to have every one of your players being above average. Rudy was 3.6, Mike Conley 2.3, Joe 1.2, Hassan Whiteside 1.0, so he's taking the nice job taking the Derrick role. Royce is 0.9, great. Boyan's 0.8, which is better. Trent's 0.1. And then Eric Paschal's minus 0.2, Donovan's minus 0.3, and Jordan Clarkson is a minus 2.7. This is like, so Mike Conley's positive brilliance of 2.3, one of the best players in the league. We only have like 10, 12 guys that are minus 2. Jordan Clarkson's negative performance right now is actually negating one of the equivalent of probably the 5th or 6th best offensive player in the league for a whole season. You know, I don't think that'll last. I hope not. If it does, we have a really big problem. But that's the reality. Who are the negative, most negative offensive players in the league? Always rookies. And then some stunning names in here. Always rookies. Cade Cunningham. Caris LeVert. Didn't help us that he was hurt last night. Jalen Suggs. Terry Rozier. Charlotte was playing much better when he was hurt. Here's some stunners. Jason Tatum -3.2. Jason Tatum's never been right since COVID. Michael Porter Jr. -3.2 out with a back injury. Kel Walker Alexander Walker -3.0. Dame Lillard -3.0. Russell Westbrook -2.9. Dame's been worse than Russ. And doesn't bring as many other things as Russ. Nikola Vucevic -2.9 and Chicago's winning. Precious Achiuwa -2.8. Jordan Clarkson -2.7. Serge Ibaka -2.7. De'Aaron Fox -2.7, which we kind of knew. Bradley Beal -2.6, and they're winning. Sadiq Bey in Detroit -2.5. Eric Bledsoe for the Clippers -2.4. Jalen Green, rookie, -2.3. Kira Lewis basically getting his first chance to play -2.3. Josh Giddey -2.3. Not Theo Maladin -2.3. None of these are surprising. And that is it on the minus twos. Marcus Smart to -1.9. All right, that is your points gained. Big takeaways that Jordan Clarkson is not shooting well. We knew that. The best players are the best, and some of the marquee names are not shooting the ball well or very efficient right now. It's pretty interesting. We'll keep an eye on what it means and what's going on with it. That is Locked On Jazz today. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with you after the Miami game with Postcast. Have a good one. See you.